Welcome to Season 2, Episode 2. Today, I talk about Qi, Qi, or Tai Chi. I have a great interview. Today on the show, we have Mr. Bill Douglas. And Bill has written several books about Tai Chi and organized World Tai Chi Day. For the question of today, I have Bill answer a question about using Tai Chi as a gateway for spiritual development. Coming up on your favorite podcast show, Cup of Tao, starting right now.
You're listening to Cup of Tao with your host, Chris L. McClish. Chris is a man with many roles, many journeys, and one spirit.
Hello, welcome to the show today. As usual, I hope you're having a good week. Today is a special episode. It's going to be a bit long, but it's going to be worth it. Today we have a special guest on the show. Bill is going to be joining us via his cell phone from my Skype, so I apologize in advance of any audio issues. Now for an introduction. William Douglas, or Bill, is the author of several best-selling Tai Chi and Qigong meditation books published worldwide in several languages. He's the founder of the World Tai Chi and Qigong Day, which is a widely recognized global health and a healing event that celebrates annually around the world. Bill is one of the world's most foremost experts on Tai Chi as a mind-body healing technology. He was selected as the 2009 inductee to the World Internal Arts Hall of Fame in New York, and he's the recipient of the Media Excellence in Qigong Award from the World Congress on Qigong in San Francisco. He's also received the Extraordinary Service in the Field of Qigong Award from the National Qigong Association. He has presented worldwide and has outlined his journey in his books. He has been commissioned to teach Tai Chi for many of the world's largest health institutions and world's largest corporations. He was the source for articles in Prevention Magazine on Tai Chi, and his programs have been used in hospitals. He has also produced a DVD that has been in the homes of patients and professionals across the United States. He has also made many appearances on TV and media as a resource. Welcome to the show, Bill Douglas.
Thank you, Chris. You know, I've really been looking forward to it. I was so excited to hear about the work that you've been doing, expanding awareness of Taoism, and especially excited when I found out that you were local.
Well, as you know, this is an episode on Qi, which I hope to get some valuable information from you about. But first, I'd like to ask you, since this overall podcast is about Taoism, tell me some of your experiences. I know you've had experience with Taoist temples, and just tell me some of your experiences with Taoism.
When I first started learning Tai Chi and Qigong, that was my first exposure to Eastern concepts. And I was just so amazed by, what I experienced in Tai Chi and Qigong that I was voraciously hungry to understand more. And I think it was my Tai Chi teacher that originally pointed me towards the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. And when I first started reading it, it was like I was trying to make linear sense of it, the way that we learn things in school.
Yeah.
And it almost gave me a headache, trying to do that. And then at some point, I think it was a combination of my Tai Chi and Qigong practice, and then also, sticking with the Tao Te Ching. And over time, I started to realize that it wasn't something that you grasp on that level. It's kind of like as you're reading the lines, you let yourself kind of just flow on the waves of experience and sensation that Lao Tzu was trying to share. And at that point, it took on a whole new, way of seeing the world for me, and the way of seeing myself in the world. And then over the years, I was trying to make sense of everything that was happening. And I started becoming aware of a lot of emerging science on, quantum physics and the quantum field. This awareness of the science of the energetic nature of the universe was really exciting for me because, you know, I realized that, you know, what Lao Tzu and the Tao Te Ching were talking about were, you know, the energetic nature of the universe and how everything's connected. Yes. And, you know, all that's reflected in you know, the quantum, you know, the quantum field, quantum science and subatomic physics. And, you know, and then there's research on quantum entanglement. You know, and the concept of Taoism is that everything's connected. Yes. And I just, all these things overlap. And so it really, it was a very exciting process to go through over these several decades of experience.
And you visited a Tai Chi temple or you had some experiences there?
Me and my wife both started studying Tai Chi together in our early 20s in California.
Yes.
And, we had just gotten married not too long before that, and so we were going to go back to Hong Kong so that I could meet Angie's family. And so I was working really hard before we went to Hong Kong complete my Guangping Yang style Tai Chi long form because I wanted to impress my mother-in-law because she had done Tai Chi when Angie was a little girl. She talked about how she'd done Tai Chi with her mom.
Got to impress the in-laws.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I put all that work into it anyway. You want to show it off a little bit. And so I was doing a lot of Tai Chi and Qigong. And that trip to Hong Kong, that was a mind exploder. I mean, on a lot of different levels. And I'll share a couple of experiences with you. But so anyway, when we got to Hong Kong, several things happened that kind of set everything up. One thing that happened was I had never traveled internationally before, and I didn't understand what jet lag was, mm-hmm. and it hit me like a sledgehammer. And when we got to Hong Kong, I actually slept for about 30 hours. I slept through this banquet that my mother-in-law had made with crab and lobster and everything, and they couldn't wake me up. And when I did wake up, then what happened was I would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning every night. And the first night I just tossed and turned all night. But then the next night I thought, you know, I might as well. My in-laws had a really, they weren't wealthy people. They were, you know, working class people, but they were fortunate enough to have gotten a home up on the hills overlooking Hong Kong. And so Angie's mom actually had a garden outside of her house. And so I started going, and it was overlooking all the skyscrapers and stuff, but it seemed like you were in nature when you were in your garden. Mm-hmm. And so I just went out there, and I just spent 2-3.5 hours doing sitting Qigong, Neigong meditation, energy meditation, mm-hmm. and also moving Qigong and Tai Chi. And so I had never been that committed. You know, to spend, you know, three or more hours every day, every morning doing this. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I've never been that dedicated since, but I think it went on for like a couple of weeks before I started to adjust. And so I had been doing a lot of meditating and then my brother-in-law, Sammy, he had a car, and so he was driving us around. He was kind of like our tour guide in a way. And he asked us, he said, there's a Taoist temple where people go get their fortunes told. They do the I Ching. And so he said, do you want to do it? And I said, you know, I didn't know what it was at the time. You know, I was just barely beginning to comprehend Taoism and stuff. And I said, sure, you know, it sounds interesting, sounds fun. And so we went to this temple, and it was a really famous temple. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, we got there, and it was all open air, and there were, like, kids playing around outside. And then you'd walk inside, and there would be people sitting in there, you know, doing different rituals and stuff. And so anyway, my wife explained to me how you do it. And what you did was you got down on your knees with this cup, kind of like pickup sticks, and it had a bunch of sticks in it, and you would think of what you wanted to know about, and then you would shake that yarrow stick cup until 3 yarrow sticks fell out. Mm-hmm. And then after the 3 yarrow sticks fell out, then you took them to a monk who was outside the temple. And so anyway, we sat down with him, and he looked at the yarrow sticks, and he had all kinds of books and stuff that he referred to he did my wife first. And at some point, she just started laughing. They were speaking Cantonese, and I knew a few Cantonese words, but you know, I didn't know what they were talking about.
Right.
And I said, "What did he say?" You know, because she was laughing. And she said, "He said I'm pregnant." And we both laughed. We both laughed because we knew that she wasn't pregnant. You know, we didn't have any plans on that level. And at that point, and anyway, a few days later, it was in August, and it's really hot and humid and sweltering in Hong Kong. And so we were walking, and Angie started getting really nauseous and sick. And so we ended up going to one of the doctors in the skyscrapers in Hong Kong. And the doctor takes a blood test. A little bit later, she comes back in with her clipboard. She looks at my wife, and she goes, "You're pregnant."
Oh, wow. No way.
So that really blew my mind. And then I was telling that story just a few months ago, because I had forgotten about what he had said about me. And I was telling that story to some friends a few months ago. And Angie said, she said, "Yeah." And she goes, you know, I was telling them the story about the, you know, the Taoist fortune telling, mm-hmm. or the I Ching.
Yeah.
And Angie said, "Yeah." She said, "That's when he told you you were going to be a teacher." And I remember we laughed at that too, because I didn't have a bachelor's degree. I had no plans to be a teacher. I never planned on teaching Tai Chi. And, so that wasn't even in my mind. And so we had laughed when he said that too. And lo and behold, you know, eventually I became a Tai Chi teacher, and I've taught all over the world now. Yeah.
That's amazing. This picture, that was a really wonderful experience to be in Hong Kong, to do the garden thing, and then to go to mm-hmm. a Taoist temple. I'm just picturing all this in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. I think travel is a really profound experience, because it takes you, especially international travel, because it takes you so out of your normal realm of understanding,
mm-hmm.
That I think it has an impact on you, that opens your consciousness, kind of like Taoist meditation does.
Sure.
You know, it's something where it kind of unplugs you from everything that you know. And then you're open to things that you wouldn't necessarily have been open to. And then another thing that happened during that trip was me and my wife Angie, we were sitting at the harbor. We were sitting on a harbor dock waiting for the ferry to come in, because we were going to go over to the Kowloon site, which is the main site, the mainland Chinese side of Hong Kong, because Angie's parents lived on Hong Kong Island.
Mm-hmm.
And so so we were sitting down there at the harbor, and it was a really gray day. And so the sky and the ocean in front of us were virtually the same color. It was a real constant background. And so we're sitting there, and all of a sudden I looked up and as somebody was walking past us,
mm-hmm.
and I could see this luminescent, like, you know, I hate to use the word aura, because it's just, you know, kind of been cliche,
right.
But it was kind of like this luminescent aura of lightness around them. And it was especially prominent around their head, and especially above their head. And eventually, you know, through my Neigong meditation, you know, I began to understand the Dantians and the energy centers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Dantian or an energy center right at the crown of the head called the Thousand Petaled Lotus. And that light was really bright there. Now, I didn't know all this terminology at that time. I was just witnessing something that I just happened to see. And then it was really bright above their head. And there's another Dantian or energy center about 6 inches above the head. It's been called many things over the millennia, the upper room. You know, there's a lot of names for it in different cultures and different spiritual endeavors. But anyway, they had this brightness above their head, and it was shiny. And when this person walked, it kind of trailed behind her from her head as she walked.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked around, and I could see this on everybody that was there on the dock that day. And I just sat there, you know, just kind of slack-jawed, you know, just looking at this. And I thought, oh, my God. And then I started elbowing Angie, and I said, "Do you see this?" Now, she had been sleeping in her childhood bed, you know, snug as a bug in a rug. She wasn't waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, doing Qigong meditation for 3 hours every day. And she didn't know what I was talking about. She didn't see it. And I just sat there and watched, and I started to notice something. As I watched, I noticed that the business, like some of the businessmen who had their, you know, hands gripped around their briefcase handle, mm-hmm. you know, obviously they were thinking about, you know, the meeting that they were going to have in the skyscraper over on the Kowloon side or whatever.
Right.
And their energy around their head and above their head, it was bright, but it was very constricted and very tight. Mm-hmm. And the people that, and I noticed that the people that were in the moment, whether they were in the moment enjoying the people that they were chatting with, or whether they were in the moment and they're just kind of enjoying the scenery.
Yeah.
Those people have this really big, huge, bright plume of light energy. And that experience stuck with me over the years, and it changed my whole Tai Chi and Qigong practice. And it also changed the way that I approached my teaching eventually when I became a teacher, because I realized that that Chan or that Zen quality that that Eastern philosophies talk about, of being present and being in the moment, mm-hmm. You know, and just experiencing that moment fully and not having your mind wrapped up around something else that's not real and not there yet. Because those meetings, those businessmen had, they weren't real. They were something that's just in their mind, right?
Right.
But the people who were in the moment, they were in the realness of reality. And they had this, you know, it's like it transformed this whole energy field within and around them. And so over time, my approach to Tai Chi and Qigong and eventually my teaching was really focused on it's like I'm always trying to bring students into their physical sensations, into their, you know, present experience of what they're feeling when they're going through the processes. Because before that, it was like I looked at Tai Chi and Qigong in a very linear mental way, you know, mm-hmm. the way that we're raised to look at things in school, you know, trying to correct, you know, little details and things like that all the time. So it was always kind of left brain and mental. But my approach over time, it evolved into trying to bring students into just a present experience where they're just feeling the sensations of their being
in the moment.
And that has a exactly. And it has a transformative experience. Now, you know, when you're learning Tai Chi, I mean, there are linear things, you know, you got to learn your posture and you got to learn your stance and you got to learn a lot of details, but that's not my biggest focus. My biggest focus is the change in consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, you know, there's a lot of talk in politics about the rising cost of healthcare. Do you believe that mm-hmm. if more people learn Tai Chi, this could be a factor in reducing healthcare cost?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and not just Tai Chi, but all mind-body practices, meditation, yoga, you know, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the data, it is shocking and it is insane that these things aren't being implemented on a massive scale. Every kid in public education classes should be exposed to mind-body practices. And you know, and that can be a combination of things. It could be Tai Chi, Qigong, meditation, yoga. But, you know, these mindfulness exercises, and if you look at the actual data, which I have, I've spent many, many years and even decades doing this. If you look at the data, Dr. Herb Benson, who he was the pioneer in, mm-hmm. in bringing meditation into modern medicine, he's at Harvard, and he wrote a book called The Relaxation Response, which is published all over the world in many languages.
Yes.
It's the Bible of mm-hmm. Scientific research. And what he says is that between 60-90% of all the illnesses sending people to the doctors are best treated by mind-body practices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many years ago, I saw a report from a study at Kaiser Permanente. I believe it was a 20-year study. And what they determined was that I think that the study said that about 70% of the illnesses sending people to their doctors were caused by stress. And I called Dr. David Sobel at Kaiser. He was a doctor that was very familiar with that study. And I asked him about it. And he said, you know, he said, depending on how you look at the data, he said that number could go as high as 85%.
Wow.
85% of the illness sustaining people to the doctors were caused by stress.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that, we're talking about trillions and trillions of healthcare dollars that could be saved by integrating this stuff into public education, corporate wellness,
yes.
senior care, you know, modern healthcare, you know, just everywhere where we can get it into public awareness, but especially public education.
Right.
And when you start thinking about trillions of dollars of saving, you know, that that has the potential of transforming the whole planet, because from what I've read, it would only take about $30 billion a year to end world starvation.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, it's really, really exciting and mind blowing and also frustrating, because why aren't we doing this? Mm-hmm. The science is already, you know,
we need to, it seems like here we do focus some on exercise, but we tend to focus more on pills and after the disease is already set in. And we see Qi, I think even those that have heard about Qi might think about energy as something a chiropractor or acupuncturist or maybe massage therapist or martial artist deals with. But it almost is like in the West, doesn't it seem like it's almost as believing in a ghost or dragons? It's not given a real property. What's your concept of Qi or Ki? How is it? What is it? How is it? Is it real? Is it not real? How does it work?
Yes. I have kind of two realms of thought on it. One is, because sometimes I'll get into arguments with Tai Chi teachers, you know, because we're in contact with Tai Chi teachers all over the world. Mm-hmm. And some Tai Chi teachers just reject it completely. And I think the reason they do is because they've been kind of traumatized by people thinking that it was somehow in competition to their religion. And it's not.
No.
It's not. It's a scientific reality is what it is. We just don't really understand it that well. But anyway, I've gotten into arguments with them, and they go, oh, she's not real. She's not real, and all this kind of stuff. And what I tell them is that, you know, the visualization of chi or energy, it has healing benefits on a person, even if it's not real. So, for example, if you think of, you know, if you have like a really tight spot in your body and you start, you know, playing with the visualizations of allowing that lightness or that life energy or that chi to expand through that area, what happens is that the capillaries open, there's more blood that gets into the deep tissue, the tissue warms and starts to relax, and that tight spot starts to untangle itself. So it doesn't matter whether, you know, on that level, it doesn't matter whether the chi is real or whether the chi is not real, because it has benefits. So if you just kind of grit your teeth and, you know, stomp your feet and you go, chi is not real, then you're not going to get the benefits from it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you're cheating yourself out of something. Now, having said that, I've had several experiences in my life that show me that the chi is absolutely real. One of them was that visual experience that I told you about. But I've had some really profound ethereal experiences at a few points in my life that changed the way that I see everything. And one of them was I had a huge transformative experience, and over the years, you know, since YouTube's come out, this happened way before YouTube was here, but since YouTube's come out, I've seen many videos of people that have had similar type experiences, and it's not uncommon for these experiences to be preceded by a really catastrophic tragedy in a person's life, and I think, and that's what happened, that's when I had that first experience. And I think the reason that may be the case is because when your life is in a wholesale free fall and collapse, you let go of your grip on what you think life is and what it's supposed to be, and all of a sudden you're open to something new. And what happened to me was within the period of about a year and a half, my mother died very, very suddenly. And then about 6 months later, my father passed away. And then about 6 months after that, my youngest son went into a coma, and he was in the hospital for about a month before he died.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And so what I did after that happened, I mean, that just rocked my world. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just like I really didn't see much point in anything anymore. Now, I had been doing Tai Chi and Qigong and meditation for a long time before that, but I wasn't interested in any of that at that point. And what I did basically, I just crawled inside a bottle, you know, and just, you know, I was just, you know, drinking my way through my life. And at some point, you know, I just realized, you know, that it was unsustainable. And I didn't want to go out this way. I still had two other children, and you know, Angie, my wife, and everything. And so one day, I just had this epiphany, and I just pulled out all the booze that I had, and I just poured it down the drain. And I remember I threw away my pack of cigarettes, and I found my running shoes in the closet, and I pulled them out, and they were all dusty. I hadn't used them for years, but I pulled them out, and I just put them on, and I just started running.
Wow!
And I just said, we were in Southern California, and I'd run down to the ocean, and I'd stare at the waves, and every moment of my life, I was unplugged. I turned off my television. I didn't listen to the radio. I didn't read newspapers. I didn't read magazines or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I was just, my whole life was just immersed in the natural world as much as possible. And so I was doing a lot of meditation, a lot of Tai Chi, a lot of Qigong. I was jogging a lot. And I'd spend hours sitting at the beach, you know, just watching the waves roll in.
Sure.
And as I was going through that, I went through, you know, all the regrets, because you always have a lot of regrets and a lot of shame when you lose people. You know, I wish I would have said this, or I wish I would have done that, or whatever, especially when it's your child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you feel very guilty. And so I just sat on the beach and I just endured all of that. And, you know, and I wept, and, you know, I mean, it was almost unbearable, but I just decided that I was going to be present. I wasn't going to run away. And because of the three deaths all in a row, they showed me that you can't run away.
Right.
You know, there's no escape.
No.
So that was a big change. And so then what happened one night was the first thing that I did was I got down on my knees by my bed, and I prayed, and that was something that was kind of childlike, you know. It's like I hadn't done that maybe since I was 7 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I got down on my knees, you know, and I just said, you know, I just said, I need to know why I'm here. Why are we here? You know, it's like, I don't get it. I need to know why we're here. And then after I did that, I got in bed and I just laid in bed and I started meditating, and I meditated until I fell asleep. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden I woke, I became awake, and I wasn't in bed. I was sitting on the end of my bed, and I'm sitting on the end of my bed, and there's this energetic presence that's like around me. It's like I can feel it. It's like I knew it's there. It was just as real as if it was a human being sitting in front of me. And this energetic presence, it said, I'm about to show you what life could be like. And all of a sudden, whatever this was, it reached out and it touched me in the center of my brain. And that's the upper dantian. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time I was thinking about it, I was just experiencing what happened. And this light just expanded through my brain, through my mind. And it was just a beautiful velvet, radiant thing. Like, there's no way that I can even begin to put it in words. And then a moment later, it touched me in the center of my heart, which is the middle dantian. And that same experience happened. And this light just started expanding. And at this point, it was like there was no me. I was this expanding light, and it expanded, the whole room. It's like I became this light that was filling the whole room. And then all of a sudden, I could see the ceiling of my bedroom like rushing at me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw the flats in the attic as I was passing through the attic. And then all of a sudden, I was looking down and I could see the roof of our house and the trees around our house. And then I could see the coastline of California. And then I could see the United States and the ocean. I could see the whole planet. And it was like I could see the moon off to my right. And this expansion was huge and fast. And in those moments, so many things happened. It was like, did you ever see that movie Contact with Jodie Foster?
I think I missed that one. I've seen the previews for it, but I didn't actually see the movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie, but she has this experience where she experiences like several days of life. But when she comes back, when her craft comes back to Earth, they tell her that she was only gone for like 3 seconds, right?
Wow.
But for her, it was this, you know, it was like time became something else. And that this experience was like that. And so in this expansion, many things happened. And I've written extensively about this. Many things happened. But one of the things that happened was that, you know, my heart and my, you know, I was completely open, just completely vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like I could feel the experiences of you know, thousands, I don't know, maybe millions of people. And it was like I could feel their hopes. I could feel their dreams. I could feel their fears. I could feel their regrets. You know, I could feel everything. And it was heartbreaking and beautiful all at the same time. And and then all of a sudden, I got scared. I thought that maybe I was dying, you know.
Yeah.
And I've talked to many people over the years, you know, when I've done classes and presentations, and I've had people come up and talk to me about experiences that they had that were akin to this, and they had that same fear. And since I had that, what I share with people is that if it ever happens again, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
You'll come back. Know that it's okay to have that experience. But anyway, the moment that I had the fear, everything started to collapse backwards. Everything, you know, and and then I just slammed back into my body. It was like some kind of cosmic vault door slamming shut. And the last thing that I was left with was this voice, the same voice that said, "I'm about to show you what life could be like." And that voice said that fear closes all doors. Fear closes all doors. And what I walked away from that experience was that everybody on the planet is all going through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are no strangers.
No.
We're all going through the same things. And I think that experience kind of planted the seeds for me to eventually be able to found World Tai Chi Qigong Day, because I was dealing with different people in different cultures all over the planet, different languages. And when you're using Google Translate, it's really easy to, you know, say the wrong thing and piss somebody off. And so if I hadn't had that experience, I don't think I would have been able to walk through the process of
And that. People can see more about World Tai Chi Day by going to the website worldtaichiday.org. Is that right?
Yeah, and they can go on YouTube and put in World Tai Chi Day and find a lot of videos. So.
What would you say to a new listener that's interested in this podcast about Taoism, and maybe they've toyed with the idea of doing something like a martial art like Tai Chi? What would you say to the new student or the person that's interested?
For me, I felt real fortunate that I found a Tai Chi teacher that incorporated Neigong or energy meditation as part of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could pursue, energy meditation and Neigong on your own as well and incorporate it. But I found that the combination of those two things is a really good thing. And then as you read the Tao Te Ching, you keep coming back to it over and over and over again as you evolve your Tai Chi and Qigong experience. What you'll find is the Tao Te Ching will appear as different things as you go through those changes. Its meaning and its breadth and its depth will expand as you go through the personal experiences of meditation. And one thing that the Taoism has really added to my Tai Chi practice is that I realized over time that the Tai Chi is not the end all and be all. It's a vehicle to train us on how to let go and relax out of the way of a flow that flows through us. And there's a great Tai Chi master in New York named William C.C. Chin, and he had a great line. He said, "I don't flow energy." He said, "Energy flows me." And I think Tai Chi and Qigong as well can give us a vehicle for learning how to relax out of the way. I always tell students that the goal of Tai Chi and Qigong is to help us to learn how to move effortlessly. And after I'd studied for a couple of weeks, I stayed after class one night and I told my Tai Chi teacher, I said, "Man, it's amazing how hard it is to move effortlessly." but that's what it is. It's this training process to learn how to relax out of the way of essentially, you know, the Tao, the flow of the universe. There's this energetic flow beneath everything, and it permeates everything on the planet and everyone on the planet. And well, probably the, I mean, I assume the universe, it permeates everything in the universe. I mean, if we were talking, you know, like in terms of like quantum physics, it's universal and it permeates everything, and it's benevolent. And it wants nothing but the best for us and everybody else. And yes. So that doesn't mean that it wants Bill Douglas to be rich, because then that may not be good for the people around me. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. All I know is I need to relax out of the way and, you know, let these things unfold through me And it takes a lot of pressure off of you. And then it also helps you discover your source. Yes. So that you're not fearful in the world. And you know that you don't depend on the approval of the society around you, but rather the approval of this universal radiance that permeates everything, that wants the best for everything. Yes. And by immersing ourselves in that experience over and over and over again, we're undaunted by the world around us more. We become more courageous to stand up for what's right and what's fair and what's just, whether it's popular or not.
Yes. I would consider myself not a mystic, but a realist. But yet, even so, I've had meditation and experiences with that. And just on a weekly basis, judo is not a martial art that emphasizes chi or ki like Tai Chi or Aikido or some of the rest do. It's a full contact martial art. And yet I noticed a long time ago, I would be competing against younger people. I'm 50 now, but I would be competing in my 40s against younger people. And I was using muscle force and a seventh degree, I believe it was seventh degree, black belt in judo taught me a technique called empty gi, which is where you just relax and you basically, it's like they're fighting an empty gi. And I got to where even now, I have health issues and I'm a lot older than my students. They have a really hard time throwing me. Even new people that come into the class and want to be Mr. MMA, they have a terrible time throwing me. And they say, well, you must have a lot of strength. And I think of it as, I just tell them I've cultivated this empty gi technique. But I think at the basis of it is actually chi, internal energy, learning how to relax, learning how to breathe properly, and learning how to manipulate whatever's there, whether a person considers it mythical or life force or whatever they consider it, whatever it is that's there. So,
well, you know, I concur with what you're saying. And the thing that I've noticed, you know, over these decades, I've had an opportunity to meet a lot of great masters. And when I first started studying Tai Chi, like I said, you know, I was so amazed with Eastern concepts that I just threw myself into everything that I could find. And we just happened to start studying in this karate school, and I didn't realize it at the time, but the master of that school, Fumio Demura, he's a legend. He's a worldwide legend in karate. He's the only guy that had ever won the World Karate Championship twice. And he is, there's actually a brilliant YouTube documentary that I encourage all your listeners to go watch on YouTube. Or maybe Netflix, might be on Netflix. But anyway, it's called The Real Miyagi. And in the Karate Kid movies, you know, all those scenes where Pat Morita, you know, Mr. Miyagi is like doing the karate in the shadows, you know?
Yeah.
That's not actually Pat Morita. That's Fumio Demura.
Oh, wow.
And Fumio Demura had a huge impact on Pat Morita. And in fact, Pat Morita, he's Hawaiian. He's American. He didn't know how to speak with a Japanese, you know, hulking accent.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah. So he just imitated, Fumio Demura. Fumio Demura gave him, that's how he got the voice for Mr. Miyagi. And so anyway, I remember one time we were studying with Fumio Demura, and he told us, he said, the power of your punch has nothing to do with your physical strength, size, prowess, or any of the things that people normally attach power to. Mm-hmm. He said, the power of your punch, and he made a fist, you know, by his hip, you know, where the punch starts.
Yeah.
And he said, the power of your punch is completely determined by how relaxed you are between here. And then he extended his arm out, you know, to the completion of the punch and here.
Wow.
He said, how relaxed you are between here and here, that is what determines the power of your punch. And that just fits so completely with Taoism. Yes. And with my Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really stuck with me over the years. And yeah, it's like we relax out of the way of a force that's much larger than us. And in order to do that, we have to let go of the ego.
Yes.
Because as long as we think of ourselves as me or I, it's kind of like with quantum physics, you know, it's like, you know, there's the debate about, you know, is it a particle or is it a wave? Well, when we think in terms of I and me, and mine, that's the particle. But when we let go, we become the wave, and the wave permeates the whole universe. And so in my Tai Chi classes, a lot of times students will start talking about really weird experiences they had. Like I had one lady, and she she was working in her closet, and she'd been doing Tai Chi for probably about 3 months, I think. And she'd been working in her closet, and a vase, she moved something, and it made a vase fall off the top shelf. And then all of a sudden she looked down and that vase was in her hand, and she was like, wow. And I haven't, I had an experience that I share with my students, and I was in a convenience store, and the kid at the counter was pouring my change into my hand. And he was pouring the change in my hand, a dime that he dropped in my hand kind of bounced off the heel of my hand and hit the counter, and then bounced off the counter and fell towards the floor. Mm-hmm. And he still had a couple of coins to pour in my hand. So I let him, you know, pour those coins in my hand. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden my hand just swept down, and I caught that dime about 6 inches before it hit the floor. Wow. And that kid at the convenience store, he goes, wow. And I looked down at my hand, and I looked down at my hand and I went, wow. Because, and I tell my students, you know, this isn't something that you can show off for people, because then your brain gets in the way. Your ego gets in the way.
Exactly.
You know, it's only something that just comes through you spontaneously. And so that's where the practice comes in, of letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go of me, letting go of I, becoming the flow, you know, allowing the flow or the Tao or however you want to phrase it, flow through you, the natural wave of the universe. And by relaxing out of the way, we find that we're able to do things that we never would have been able to do, you know, if we would have been thinking, I'm going to do this. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yes. Now, this is probably a good point for the question of today, because I know Tai Chi is very dear to you, and I'm sure you're the right person to ask this question. Time for the question of today. Bruce from Vancouver Island in British Columbia, Canada writes, as a Tai Chi student for a few years, I'm very interested in the practice as a gateway or portal into spirituality. I'm wondering if you have any instruction or description about how Tai Chi is relevant to spirituality.
Well, that's a great question. I think Tai Chi can be, not necessarily. It depends on, you know, how we approach Tai Chi and what we want to get out of it. You know, I think Tai Chi at its highest level is relaxing out of the way. You know, Lao Tzu said, let go. I can't remember the exact line, but it was like, let go of the grip on who you are so that you can become what you might be. Mm-hmm. You know, essentially become an evolutionary creature, you know, who opens and expands physically, emotionally, consciously. On a consciousness level.
Yes.
And so this concept of Tai Chi becoming a vehicle that teaches how to relax out of the way so that a flow can flow through us that is larger than we can contain or own or claim or any of that kind of stuff, that can become a great vehicle for spiritual expansion. And now that one experience that I was telling you about after I had that great loss in my life, it's complicated to say that happened because of Tai Chi or because of Qigong, but what I do absolutely believe is that I do believe that my Tai Chi and Qigong practice prepared me so that I was able to behold an experience that was larger than I could ever have been open to before. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so I think it kind of prepares us for these spontaneous events, if and when they happen to us, and to be able to have some kind of context for what happened. And the other thing too is that, you know, I always tell people, you know, I don't care whether you're a Buddhist or a Hindu or a Muslim or an atheist or, you know, Lutheran or whatever. Tai Chi is a vehicle to enhance your spiritual experiences, or, you know, in the case of an atheist or an agnostic, you know, just your life experiences. So it has no attachment to anything. That's the whole concept of Taoism. The Tao is not the word Tao. You know, I mean, Lao Tzu says and emphasizes that over and over again. You know, the Tao that can be named is not the true Tao.
Right.
It's something universal and flows through all of us. And I think Tai Chi helps us relax out of the way so that we can open to that greater being that we are, you know, however we perceive that, however it flows through.
In addition, it helps cultivate the other parts, the mind-body connection, as well as the spirituality. It sounds like you're open to you're in the moment, you're able to do the moves in such a kind of woo-wee way. And at the same time, you're developing your health, your body, your breathing. You're working on all aspects of yourself, spiritual, mental, and physical, it sounds like.
Yes. Yeah. And it's very, you know, in our modern rush world where people have less and less time to do everything, you know, it's a highly efficient thing to do because you're, you know, like you say, you're getting a mental, you know, Tai Chi and Qigong are, you know, the science shows that it reduces depression, anxiety, mood disturbance, treats attention deficit disorder and hyperactivity disorder. And at the same time, it's profound, you know, the science shows that it profoundly boosts the immune system by 50 to 100%. It slows the aging process. It really profoundly improves the cardiovascular benefit. Time Magazine just did an article last year that said that in the title, it said Tai Chi provides the same benefits as CrossFit training.
Wow.
And if people sign up for our newsletters at worldtaichiday.org, we always publish these kind of reports when they come out, so you stay up to date on things like that.
In answer to Bruce's question, you said it kind of opens the door for the spiritual, so it is kind of a gateway. And you've talked about students and yourself having experiences, spiritual experiences, so it sounds like it creates an awareness as well of the spiritual.
Yeah, that mindfulness, you know, that being aware of your sensory. And, you know, and also, you know, Tai Chi can cultivate a larger awareness of our energetic nature, you know, especially if you combine it with Neigong meditation. But I mean, people can experience that with, you know, Qigong and Tai Chi as well, you know, without the Neigong. But I just, you know, for me, I just, you know, might as well do the Neigong energy work as well, because it's all about being present and just experiencing sensations of your being. And as you practice those tools on a regular basis, you get to where you just feel that energetic nature in every part of your being. And you realize that you're not a solid structure, that you're a nebulous structure. And that opens your heart, opens your emotions, opens your mind. And one thing that's really interesting is that the modern scientists found that when people practice Tai Chi, it makes the brain larger and increases the size of the hippocampus. And another really exciting thing that they found is that mind-body meditative type experiences increase the size of the empathy and compassion part of the brain, and they shrink the stress and fear part of the brain. They physically, you know, enlarge empathy and compassion part of the brain, and actually physically shrink the stress and fear part of the brain. And so, as the fear is removed and we're more open, you know, just open, you know, because in Tai Chi we have, you know, the main focus is the three dantian, the lower dantian where you move from. That's where all your, you know, qi, your chi, your power comes from, you know, from moving from that, you know, that core in the upper pelvis. But then also the heart, the middle dantian, and then the brain, the upper dantian. And so by constantly relaxing, you know, just experiencing the sensations of our energetic nature and our flow, it loosens and opens, you know, our heart and mind and consciousness to larger experiences becoming possible. I think these kind of experiences are waiting to expand through all of us all the time. It's just waiting for us to kind of set the stage so that there's space for that lightness, that life energy, or that change, or that evolution, or whatever it is that wants to expand through us. I think we all have. I think there's a reason why all of us are here on the planet at this moment.
Yeah.
And these are tools that can help us relax out of the way so that, as Lao Tzu said, we can become what we might be.
Yes. Yes. Your books are available on Amazon, aren't they, Bill?
Yeah. The Complete Idiot's Guide to Tai Chi and Qigong and the Tao of Tai Chi, The Making of a New Science. And then also my DVD, Anthology of Tai Chi and Qigong, The Prescription for the Future. And also I have a CD of Neigong meditations called an anthology of Qigong.
And anyone listening in the area, you teach Tai Chi classes in Kansas, is it Leawood?
Yeah, we teach through the city of Leawood on Thursday evenings, and we teach through the city of Shawnee on Saturday mornings. And that's a gorgeous location. It's ceiling to floor windows on three walls overlooking a wooded pond. I was going to construct a Tai Chi studio. I couldn't have done a better job. It's really gorgeous. And And then we also, there's also a place called Turning Point, which is part of the University of Kansas Hospital Network. Mm-hmm. And they have classes for people that are dealing with chronic health issues. So if anybody's suffering from a chronic health issue, they can apply and get access to those Turning Point classes. But our public classes are through the city of Leawood and the city of Shawnee.
Okay, great, great.
And also, everybody should come to World Tai Chi Day at the Nelson Atkins Museum. If you have a link to that video or you show some of that video on your website or Facebook page or whatever, if they see that video that I had sent you earlier, that's where this whole world event started. And it's in 100 cities and 80 countries all over the world on the last Saturday of April. And it all started at the Nelson Atkins Museum 20 years ago. This is our 20th anniversary. And so if they come on the last Saturday of April, which is April 27th this year in 2019, they can come at 9:30 a.m. in the morning, and we'll teach everybody, a couple of Tai Chi moves, and they can be part of this worldwide wave that starts in New Zealand and then spreads all across Asia, all across Africa and Europe, North America and South America, and then ends with the final event in Hawaii.
I'll put that in the show notes, the link to the YouTube video for World Tai Chi Day. And those of you, if you are in Kansas City at the end of April, that's Nelson Atkins Art Museum.
Yep, April 27th.
Saturday. April 27th.
Yeah.
Bill, it's been a absolute pleasure and joy to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
I want to connect with you outside the show, too.
That'd be awesome. It's been really great meeting you. Like I said, I was really excited when I heard about the work you were doing, expanding, the Dallas concepts, through your programs.
Thank you so much. Thank you to Bruce for the question of today. And thank you to Bill Douglas for taking his time to do a interview with us here on the show. It was very educational and interesting. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you, Chris.
Now, before I let you go, I have a few messages. Don't forget to subscribe to my show in your podcast player app or to the RSS feed. You can find my email address, contact information, a disclaimer, and more information in the show notes, so please check those out. Be sure and purchase my book, Accepting Life on Life's Terms, Taoist Psychology for Today's Uncertain Times. Look for the book wherever you buy books, available in written and digital format. Hey, that's all for today's show. I'll see you next week. Have a good week. May peace and love be with you. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Have a good day. This podcast is a Coach CMC production.